Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Somebody texts and says, Niall, Alan sounds like he's in a tunnel. Poor Alan can't. Well, he was. We keep him in a tunnel all the time. That's what we do with him. We say, Anil, you get into that tunnel there. I know, I do apologise. That's my fault, actually, for leaving the microphone on at the same time while he was on. I do apologise. Anyway, now I'm going to talk to you about a social housing and an email that we received from a listener. Now, at present, as you may or may not know, all new housing developments must earmark 10% of their units for social housing, and new residential developments must also include a minimum of 10% for affordable homes. It's a good thing, isn't it? But have a listen to this email. It says, Dear Niall, I'm reaching out to ask you your thoughts on a situation that's been bothering me. I purchased a home for $450,000 and I work hard to pay that mortgage each month. However, my next door neighbour is living in a house provided by social housing. What frustrates me is that while I'm working hard to maintain my property, her home and garden are very unkempt. Considering she doesn't work, you would think that she would look after the house, but the grass is rarely cut. There's noise from her children who are very badly behaved playing out in the street. She frequently smokes at the front door and the back of the house, which drifts over into my space. And there's a man who seems to be at the property most of the time as well. I can't help but wonder if this is fair. I'm trying to figure out if I'm being unreasonable or if others might feel the same way who are in my position. I'd be interested to hear your perspective and if this is something your listeners have experience of. Thank you for your time and providing a space where people can discuss these kind of issues. I look forward to hearing your thoughts. Now, that's the email received from a listener. And to be honest, it's one of many that we receive on the same type of issue time and time again over the last 14 or 15 years. And it is something worth a conversation. But what do you do? You can't just... See, if you don't integrate people, what happens is you end up with ghettos, which we did many years ago. For example, we put people on social welfare, for example, or people on low income into Ballymun. And look what happened when we built all those big flats, towers, which had all since been knocked down. We created a problem where there's a lot of antisocial behaviour. When you have a large percentage of a population of an area who are unemployed or on very low income, you will end up with high crime rates and big social problems. That's just a fact. So the whole idea is that you integrate. That was the whole idea of bringing in the 10% and 10% affordable housing. So how do you do this without pissing people off? Because to be fair to them, if you've worked hard and you're working hard to pay a €450,000 mortgage and someone next door is getting it for practically nothing, I can understand why people might have a grievance. But do you agree with the way it's done and think that there should be an allocation of affordable housing developments maybe somewhere else and not interfering with somebody who buys their €450,000-€500,000 house in a leafy suburb? Or would that be unfair to dump people all in one area who are on low income or can't afford to buy their own home? Let me know what you think. The number is 087-188-0008. So here's, I think the best way to word this question probably is he being a snob? I mean, is this guy just being a snob? Let me know what you think. The number is 087-188-0008. Eddie, hi, how are you?
Good evening, Noel. Great topic.
Yeah. Look, it happens.
Great topic. Do you know what, Noel? He's not being a snob, right? I'm going to be really controversial. I'm going to call this out. It's an absolute slap in the face for the hardworking man stroke woman. Here's the incentive, right? You work hard, you save your fucking deposit, you work your bollocks off, and the incentive from working hard is you get to live in a nice area in your forever home and raise your kids and your family in a nice place.
Yeah, you can pick and choose. And then, well, you can pick and choose within your budget where you live.
Someone who doesn't work moves in beside you and gets the exact same for sitting on a hole and doing fuck off. And people call it begrudgery. You're bloody damn right, I'd be begrudgery. Because here's the thing, and people don't like to fucking hear this, right? There's more antisocial behaviour in council estates than in private areas.
Of course there is.
All my
family, all my brothers
and sisters are in council estates. If you, and every single one of them would say, if I could move to a private house tomorrow, I would. They'd be gone. They'd be out of there. And people don't like to hear that. And I said to you before, if I took a house in Cherry Orchard or Darndale and I moved it to Harold's Cross, Ratgar, Castle Knock, it'd be worth twice as much because it's in a more desirable area where less crime rate. Now, do you remember when the Jury's Hotel in Balls Bridge, Barclay Court, that got knocked down, right? And the builder was building these high-rise condominiums. And the government told him 10% has to go to social housing. And he went, yeah, no bother. He built it all, right? The starting price was like a million. Rod Stewart bought one. Do you know what he did to get around it? He bought a parcel of land in Ringsend and he built loads of apartments and he went, there's your 10%. None of them are going in here. And I thought, fair play to you. Because why should you get a property like that for doing absolutely nothing towards earning it, you know?
That's what a lot of developers did. A lot of developers did that. They built the private estate and around the corner, they built, you know, so if they put 100 houses in, they put the 10 or 20 houses for affordable housing and social housing around the corner in a smaller estate so it wouldn't be in the way. Some developers did that. But the government didn't like that idea, so they kind of start insisting you have to integrate them. Now, there's not only that, you also have a situation where now in private estates and people are selling, the Department of Social Protection will buy houses, you know, within a housing estate. So you're in your leafy suburb, Department of Social Protection buys a house and then moves, you know, somebody in on low income or unemployed. And the argument is so people have to live somewhere.
Noel, I'll tell you another story, right? It's out towards your neck of the woods. You'd be more familiar with this area. Clare Hall, right?
Yeah.
So a mate of mine, he's going out with a girl from Clare Hall and her family, sorry, he lives in Clare Hall in an apartment. Her family are Clongriffin, right? So she wanted to be close to the family. So she wanted to buy an apartment in Clare Hall. And he said, no, let's just rent it for a while. So he took out a 2-year lease, right? He's on a balcony with three other apartments and they're all hacked. It's been raided about 5 times in the last 9 months. And he's gone, Jesus Christ, I dodged a bullet here, not buying it, you know?
Yeah.
And he can't wait to get out of the place. Can't wait, because they don't deserve the same quality of life as him, because they're not bloody doing that to contribute to it. And here's this kicker, right? Well, people will be going mad listening to this. If I build a private estate, and I build a council estate, and a mile apart, and I take the statistics after 20 years, which one is going to have more crime?
Well, you've answered your own question.
Yeah, and people don't like admitting that. It's like you said about Ballymun, the high rise. Well, if that Ballymun was built 50 years ago and it was just for private residents, the crime rate wouldn't be half as high. And people don't like hearing that because they go, oh, you're fucking judging us all. I'm not judging us all. I'm just saying, unfortunately, antisocial behaviour is higher in a council area than a private area. So I don't agree with it.
So here's the thing. He's talking about the house being unkempt, right? So if you drove down a street and I said to you, on that street, there's 200 houses. 20 of those houses are social housing. Do you think you'd be able to spot the ones that were social housing?
Well, look, you wouldn't probably be able to spot every single one because some people do have pride, but you definitely pick out a few. You definitely pick out a few. It's like I said, my brothers and sisters live in council areas. And when I go over, the difference between their areas and a private area is chalk and cheese. Honestly, fucking sulkies outside bleeding doors and speed ramps higher and fucking rubbish all over the place and just unkempt gardens and houses. And yeah, you can spot them, you know. And
but here's the thing, you answered your own question earlier on by saying that when you build Ballymun, you know, and everybody accepts this, even the experts, that when you build all these high rises and you put a lot of people in who are on low income or unemployed, you're going to have antisocial problems, right? Same goes for Darndale, Cherry Orchard and all the other places you mentioned too. So the whole idea is to try and get away from that old model of putting people of the same class together to create those ghettos by integrating people. Wasn't that the argument? And now you're saying, integrating people is unfair, right? You're saying.
It is very unfair. Because if you're the one that's a high achiever and you've gone to university and you've worked hard and you get to live in a nice area, and then all of a sudden you're surrounded by people that don't do that with their life and the crime rate rises, your quality of life has been brought down because of the integration. And that isn't right as well.
Stay there for a second if you can. John, hi, how are you?
Evening, Niall. How are you keeping?
You would have no problem with that allocation.
With
social housing being in the middle of a leafy suburb.
Yeah, I'm in a leafy suburb here, and I bought the house 2 years ago. I got divorced ever since I bought the house. I didn't realise in the house next door, I bought it out privately. The house next door, the council bought it, and the house across the road, the council bought it. Now, there's about 100 houses. They're all private, and they're all elderly. I am so, so lucky. The two people, the two families that moved in to this council, they're angels. You couldn't get better people. They keep their houses way, way better than mine. Of course, it was total. They were totally done up. The council went in, they gutted them, they put in this newfangled heating that did everything. But the two families that took them over, they spent a fortune. They put you could play snooker on the lawns. They're absolutely 100%.
Well, I'm delighted that happened for you. That's not everybody's experience.
Like you said, you were lucky.
I have a friend of mine living in another part of town, and he bought, 18 years ago now, he bought affordable housing in an estate. And everyone, when he moved in first, everyone was happy. But people started to, I suppose, inherit houses, or they started to move out, and they started selling.
Thanks.
The council bought them back, and people sold them off, and now it's like Fort Apache, the Bronx. He's lad sitting on his back wall drinking cider, jumping into his trampoline, terrorizing his kids. He doesn't drive a car, so he has this house. His driveway is empty. But we came out one day, there was a van in the fucking driveway. Like,
somebody else's van in his driveway.
If you don't have a car, I can park my car there. Like. And he's on antidepressants. It's all about who your neighbors are.
Here's the big question then, according to Eddie, that if it's, you know, people on social protection, your neighbours are less likely to be the type of people you'd want there.
Yeah, well, the council needs to put in some kind of standards. Like, you can't have...
How can you put in a standard? What do you want to do? I give them a little quiz or something? I don't know. How do you put in a standard?
If you have a house two doors down from you with 14 washing machines and 100 sheets of galvanized packed up out the fucking front, and a trailer, four horses, and a couple of unconscious people. Like, the council should be able to walk in and say, hey, we're putting you out on Spike fucking Island if you don't get your act together.
But here's the thing, the council rarely put people out of a house. The only time is because of antisocial behaviour. And even then, that has to be complained by a lot of people. And when they do put people out, the argument is then that they have to put them somewhere else. So they only end up just moving them.
You know what I mean? There has to be...
a social contract. Yeah, well, there is a social contract. If you're being given something, you should behave yourself. But hold on. But Eddie objects to the fact that if he's paying 450 grand and paying a mortgage for a house in a nice area, there's no way that somebody should be moving in next door and not having to pay a mortgage, not having to work hard, and, you know, they're maybe, I don't know, a single mum with three kids or something like that. He objects to that. It's unfair.
Once they keep their house tidy, and
you don't care.
They're sociable. I don't have a problem with people. Once they keep their house
well, Eddie, tidy. Well, Eddie, is that fair? Once they keep the house tidy and they're sociable, he doesn't have a problem.
But no, well, it's like that chap said, the two neighbours that moved in, and he used the word lucky. But a lot of people aren't lucky, and their quality of life is hindered because of this bleeding screw. I don't care, Noel. I'd go back and go, right, we'll build 10%, or all the 10% are together away from a private area, and continue to build council estates. And if you want a better settlement movement with a private one, there's your incentive. You know?
But then we're just going back to the 1970s.
I'd be quite happy with that if I was a homeowner. I'd be happy with that if I was living in a private area and it was all private and we went back to the 70s. And I'm telling you now, most people listening now are paying a king's ransom for their property, would be happy with that as well.
Yeah, I see both sides of the argument. I see how unfair it can be when you're working your nuts off and have no disposable income and you're paying a mortgage and somebody gets to move in essentially for free, you know, next door and gets everything handed to them. I can see why people would begrudge that, and I understand that. But do we really want to go back to a stage where we're creating ghettos all over the... I mean, look at the ghettos we already have. We created those ghettos back in the 70s. So
I don't care, Noel.
Sorry, John.
We should be controlling the ghettos. We should. The ghettos is because the councils aren't. They're letting the people away with murder. It's just a few families. Don't get me wrong. In the council houses, 90% or 99% of people are the best in the world.
I thought you were going to use the old cliche, the salt of the earth. I thought you were. I wouldn't go as far as say 99%. That's a bit of a stretch. I don't know.
Yeah, but some of them.
A lot of them are okay. Yeah, some of them are not. Yeah.
And that they've got fucking...
See, there's an argument, and the argument Eddie is making, John, essentially is, if you well, hang on, the argument Eddie's making essentially is, with the exception of your two neighbours, and you, by your own admission, you're lucky, they can play snooker in their front garden, but if the argument Eddie is making is, if you get something for nothing, you don't look after it.
Yeah, a lot of them don't, but they don't because they have alcohol problems, or they're fucking not happy, or I started work when I was 1974, and I worked to 2002, and then I was made unemployed and divorced and the whole lot, and I'm hanging around like a spare prick. I'm 65 now in January, and I'm still looking for a job.
You haven't worked since 2002.
What?
You haven't worked since 2002.
Yeah, well, 2 years.
I'm sorry if I'm being personal, but do you have a disability, John?
No.
Lazy eyes.
I do have disability. My doctor told me I should go on disability, but I won't go on disability because I want to get a job. Now, I did get a job.
Well, if you don't feel you should be on disability, you're clearly not disabled. Okay, in relation...
I have disabled, but I don't want to go.
I'm still trying to figure out how you've been unemployed since 2002. In the middle of the Celtic Tiger, you were unemployed.
2000, sorry, Niall.
2000, whatever. 25 years you're unemployed.
No, sorry. 2022.
I thought you said 2002.
I did. I was mistaken. No, 2022. I'm 2 years.
Right. Even that nowadays strikes me as unusual. Stay there for a second, Eddie and John. I got to take a quick break. Alan, I'm going to be with you straight after the break. The number, by the way, is 087-188-0008. Eddie, you could call him a snob if you want to, but some people are defending what he's saying. He says he doesn't want to pay 450 grand for a house and having somebody move in next door. This quote earlier on was a scrote. Somebody moving in next door who's on welfare. He said that's unfair. They should be in their own area. And he said that means that it leaves you something to aspire to. But is that being a snob? Let me know what you think. The number is 087-188-treble. Stay there for a second, Eddie, if you can. Alan, hi, how are you?
Hey, Niall.
Alan, is it a bit unfair to start labelling people and saying, well, just because somebody moves in on welfare next door to you in your 450,000 house in a, you know, in a leafy suburb, you know, that you have any right at all to begrudge them?
There's a certain understandable reaction from the upper classes who have issues with people of a lower class moving next door to them because it brings down the genre of the area they're living
in.
The tone. But the ghettoisation of Ireland is in Dublin. It's Dublin that has the problem with the elite snobbery of Dublin 4 and Dublin 6 and all these areas where the elite live. Dublin is the most expensive part of Europe. So a lot of people have vested interest in keeping their property prices up. So people will naturally tend to want people who are upwardly mobile moving into their area, who have a steady income, who have no life-controlling problems. So it's understandable, but it's also a problem that really is unique to Dublin.
I don't think it's unique to Dublin. There are parts of Cork as well that would be council houses, parts of Limerick, Galway.
Not as bad as Dublin, of course. Dublin is an elitist area.
What's the solution? But is Eddie right to say, why should, or is anybody right to say, because you just said it yourself, you know, those classes want people who are upwardly mobile and have a job and an income to move in. Is there anything wrong with wanting that? If you've aspired to live there and pay a mortgage to live there,
well,
is there anything wrong with that?
Denial. I lived in inner city all my life, and my wife came from an upper class part of Dublin as well. She came from an opposite side of the Spring. She came from Hoth and Sutton. And I met her when I moved into Horsblatt, and we got together, and then we moved into Bluebell. We got a council flat off the council. And for 5 years we were there. For the first 3 years it was great, and then all hell broke loose, and we moved out and moved down to Glendalough to get away from all the antisocial behaviour. So I can see why people with wealth would want to keep wealth in their area.
Well, then you're agreeing with Eddie. You're not saying anyone's a snob.
I'm not agreeing. I understand it, but it's an obvious problem. Hello, Davin 4, like, you know, living in T4, going to college and all that. You know, well, hello, darling.
Good morning. Yeah, good morning, Tristan.
Stop using D4, right? Say, for example, Talla, the biggest suburb in Dublin, right? Plenty of private estates in Talla, plenty of council estates in Talla. You take the stats for the last 10 years for any private estate, pick one you want, and one council estate for any social behaviour, and 10 out of 10, the council estate would be higher. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I know that. That's understandable as well.
Why is it understandable?
Why is it understandable?
No, not understandable as in allowable. I'm not saying it should happen. But the most of the people that come from the ghetto areas of Dublin, they're inherited dysfunction. They grow up with an expectation that their lifestyles are all ending up in prison. So they pass on to their genetics, onto their children and their grandchildren. It started with the tenements. Most of the people that came out of tenements, their grandchildren ended up in Mountjoy.
Alan, a lot of people in private estates, families came out of tenements. That's a lame excuse.
No, I'm not saying it's an excuse. It's a fact. The tenements spread dysfunction.
I know a lot of people that came out of tenements.
My father and mother came out of a tenement. And when I was born, they were living in Mountjoy Square in a flat.
I'm not saying that everyone that comes out of tenements is going to break the law, but there was an aberrant energy in them areas, like where the areas from the north inner city to the south inner city, they had an attitude of law breaking from the very time they were built. I came from Michael's Estate, and it was opened up in 1968. As a what really top of the range accommodation, and it turned into a ghetto in 4 years.
But is it fair that somebody moves into, you know, a fancy apartment and they pay $500,000 for it, or a fancy house and they pay $500,000 for it, and then Mary or Johnny, who's unemployed, moves in next door with four kids?
No, it is unfair. It would be unfair. I accept that it's unfair, but there is an issue.
And they're banging out the kids, right, to get higher up on the list. There was an article in the Herald last year, Noel, and I was doing the maths. Some woman was being interviewed, and it was all written down the paper. She was in this hotel for 3 years, and she was complaining. And she had kids who were 5, 4, and 1.5. And I was going, 1.5? So you were in the Moyer in that fucking hotel room with your partner and two kids.
And you still went and got pregnant again. Yeah, I know.
Jesus Christ almighty, what are you doing? Have some fucking level of personal responsibility. You know,
I accept that there is a certain genre of inner city energy that is not acceptable for the upper classes, and I can see that.
The other question, Alan, is Eddie makes the point that people who get something that's subsidised by the state, technically if they're on welfare, well, then they're getting the money from the state to pay the small amount of rent that they'd be asked for, 30 quid a week or whatever it is, right? So the people who get those, they don't look after them as well as the guy next door, the family next door who are paying, you know, a heavy mortgage on it because they value their property a bit more. Would you agree with that?
Well, that would also happen as well. There is a certain tendency when you get something for nothing, you don't appreciate it. So the government have to start realising that people who are working their asses off to get a mortgage and to get an apartment and who are working for it need to be given a certain leverage of common sense when it comes to giving these to people who have no respect for anyone but themselves.
I mean, I see the council and they go out and paint houses, right? So they go out and paint the houses, you know, the council houses. And I often say to myself, okay, a lot of these people are just on people on low income or whatever, or they're unemployed. Can they not paint their own house? How much is a tin of paint? Do you know what I mean? Can they just paint their own house? Can they just cut their own grass? I had a guy on the air one night, he was working for the council, and he was an electrician. He was called out at 11 o'clock one night to change a light bulb.
I lived in council flats, and I always done my own thing. I never got called on the council to do anything. I always paid private contractors to do things in your flat instead of waiting for ages for the council. So I always had independence.
I had a woman on the air here one day giving out shite about the council, right? That she was cold and the house was damp. And I said, why? And she said, oh, 3 years ago, somebody broke the pane of glass in the door. And it's been like that ever since. I've been onto the council about 20 times. And I said to her, would you not just buy a pane of glass for it? And she said, oh, that's not my job. I go,
no, see, there is an attitude. Like, I'm not afraid to say this. There is an attitude in the inner city areas that I came from of handouts, people self-entitled and who have everything wrapped around the covers. When it comes to people inheriting their grandparents' apartments from their council flats, it goes on all the time. People have a self-ingrained, entitled culture where everything is handed up for free, and so they don't do it for themselves.
So, okay, well, hang on, let me just go to Tom. No, no problem. Stay there, Alan and Eddie. Let me go to Tom. Tom, hi, how are you?
How are you doing now? How are things?
Good. Tom, is it a bit snobby to suggest that, you know, I should be entitled to live in a place where everybody's paying a mortgage rather than people getting, you know, subsidised housing from the state?
You know, I am in exactly the same. I am in exactly this situation. I bought a house a few years ago in Drogheda. I had to move out of Dublin because I couldn't afford to get mortgage in Dublin.
Yeah,
you know, so we decided with the other half that we're going to move further up. So we decided to go to Drogheda. So we found a nice little estate, 30-odd houses, but the estate wasn't finished, like, you know.
Yeah.
But there was no signs of construction going on. So we decided to go ahead. We moved in, and after 5 years, which is literally last year, happened that on the back of the estate, there is a big apartment block. I don't know, maybe 100-odd apartments in it and a couple of houses. And all of them were kind of like a social housing.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, since those people moved in and the area we lived was very quiet, you could leave literally everything outside. I mean, the kids could leave their bikes and so on,
yeah,
so on, you know?
Yeah.
But after a while, the things start disappearing. So the kids' little bicycles were gone, then some toys and so on, so on. And believe it or not, even this morning, I found it that in the space of last couple of weeks, somebody tried to get into my cars about 3 times.
Wow.
Because I can see on the camera, you know?
Yeah.
And you know what? The funny part of all, I record this and I went to the guards, to the local guard station. I reported that and they said, listen, nothing happened actually because they didn't steal the car, so nothing we can do.
They can't even charge them with attempted theft.
Exactly. Huh. That's what I was told.
Oh, I should be bothered.
So I did my best, and as you said, we really working hard trying to get the mortgage.
So what are you going to do now, Tom?
To be honest,
move.
At the moment, there's not much I can do, to be honest, you know.
Well, the thing about it is, and I hate to be the Grim Reaper on this one for you, Tom, it's not going to change. If anything at all, it might get worse because they might build more. So what I'm saying
But you know, like this morning when I copped the thing on the camera, the fellow wasn't even covered. You could clearly see the face. You could see everything.
He didn't care. I mean? Yeah, he didn't care.
No, and I had a big spotlight front of the house.
Yeah, sorry, Eddie.
And
that proves,
and
that
even
proves,
the light
sorry,
wouldn't...
Go ahead, go ahead.
That proves my point. If all of those properties that were built beside Tom were all mortgage, private, the level of crime would be probably minuscule compared to what it is now. The more council estate built beside you, the higher level of antisocial behaviour.
I'm not disagreeing with that. And Tom is 100% right. I'm probably sure, I doubt for a minute he's telling us any untruths whatsoever. But here's the problem. So what do you do? Do you build them all out in a field in the middle of nowhere where they've no access to amenities or transport or utilities or libraries and shops? So, I mean, so what are you going to do? If we all accept there's a problem with building social housing or a large population of social housing of people of one class versus another in a certain place, you know, well, then what do you do? How do you resolve this situation? How do you resolve Tom's situation? You can't, unfortunately. It's the luck of the draw.
But in fairness, we cannot throw everyone in the same bag. As
no,
my
absolutely.
Previous caller, whoever said, there's nice people as well.
Of course.
Some of them are obviously, you know.
The vast majority are probably decent people, Tom. But the problem is you are going to get more people who are not nice in those types of areas. And that's just statistically true. Most are probably decent
people.
And
exactly, people. Like, you see, like the man, it's different, but the women, that some people around the neighborhood working night shifts and so on, the people are terrified, like, you know, to stay on their own, the gaff in their own house.
Yeah.
God knows who's going to knock into the door middle of the night.
So what's your plan now, Tom? Do you have a plan? No, you haven't got a plan.
No, I don't have a plan, because at this stage, there's not much I can do unless you're going to grab somebody by the hand and literally use something.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't want you to get into that. I mean? I don't want you to get into that situation. And when did you buy that house? 5 years ago. So much did you pay for it 5 years ago, Tom?
It was exactly 2019, I think. It was just over 6 years. This spring, next spring would be 6 years. At the time, we were just around 240.
Okay. 240, okay. Well, it's probably worth a little bit more now anyway because of the cost of housing has gone up, but that's probably going to crash very soon.
Well, on the end of the day, these days, if I would like to sell it, I'd probably, you know, just because of the existing situation, I wouldn't get as much for this property because the area.
I was just going to say that. So anybody potential buyers to come out will look at the back and they go, what's that? Oh, saw those apartments exactly. There, yeah. And that's exactly what I would do. If I was coming out to buy your house, I'd have a look around the area and see what's around the area. That's what everybody does. And that devalues your property. But Tom, so there's, I don't know, if there's 150 apartments, that's roughly 600-700 people. What do you suggest happens to 600 people who can't afford their own home, who can't afford, you know, so they can't afford rent at the going, you know, private rate. So they have to be, subsidized by the state. So what do you suggest we do?
I don't mind mixing people with whatever, but there is a 30 odd proper like private houses, but the 30 private houses compared to 100 and odd apartments, you know, it's the balance is not right, I think.
Mm. Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, I can see why that would be a problem.
I wouldn't mind to be 50-50, like, you know.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I don't think that would still make a difference. I still think you'd have a problem, but however.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've got to take a break. Stay there, lads, if you want to. I'm going to come to Joe after the break. By the way, the number is 087. All right, keep texting us, keep WhatsApping. The number is 087-188-0008. Alan, you know, it's one thing what we talked about in relation to what Eddie was saying, somebody moving in next door in the middle of a housing estate that's not paying, right, and pissing them off. But it's another thing when you build a house or a nice little housing estate, your clutch of 30 or 40 nice private houses, and then all of a sudden they build an apartment block, you know, I don't know, 300 yards away, with 150 people in it, who completely devalue and destroy an area.
I know, it's very complicated. It's not going to be easy to solve this one, Niall. This is a hard one, because we're talking about integration, but it doesn't work, really. Integration only is start from within when they want to get their act together and have proper style and kindness. When young people who have no morals move into an area where there's wealth, they see it as a cash cow.
Well, not even wealth. Tom, to me, doesn't strike me as somebody who's been quite wealthy. I mean, he's middle class.
Term, but Niall,
middle class.
I'm talking about the fact that people in where I come from, the majority of them they're aspirationists, are not there. They're not aspirationists. They usually end up on the dole and they end up going down dark routes. Not everyone now, but the majority of them would be low income. And their dole is their extension of the hand. And it just becomes like that every day for areas where there is high crime rates. People look for drugs and then it's crime and then prison. So people don't want to live next door to something that could actually cause that much harm on their area.
Mm. Eddie, what would you do? What would you do if you were Tom?
Who are you talking to?
Yeah, I'm talking to you, Eddie.
Oh, unfortunately, he'd done his due diligence and he moved into a lovely little estate and then he was blindsided a couple of years later and he built that. Yep. So it sounds like he's kind of stuck, you know, and that's very unfortunate. But what I would say to anyone else who has the few bob and they're looking to get on the property ladder and they're listening to this now, there's plenty of private estates out there that were built before this 10% integration rule came in that are pretty much still fully private. I would try to find one of them. That's what I would do. That'd be the only workaround I could think of.
Stay there for a second. Let me go to Joe as well. Joe, hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad, Niall. Good evening. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. Joe, do you understand what this guy in the email is talking about and why he's giving out so much, or is he just being a snob, like Eddie? Sorry,
No, I come here. I would not say they were snobs. I think they're concerned citizens. Like, obvious, if you have a lot of antisocial behaviour going on in an area where you're living, it's obvious you're going to have to call it out, because there is an awful lot of crime going on in those kind of areas, you know, where there's a lot of, as the other chap said there, the lack of integration and all that stuff. But with respect, Niall, you know, a lot of these people can integrate if they want to. I think there's just a form of their backgrounds. You see, probably they're probably their fathers and mothers or whatever were probably the lowest of the low and whatever, like, and they're probably taken off from where they're coming from, like, you know. And the antisocial behaviour element then continues in the family. It's like, you know, say you have major underworld figures, just naming the Krays now, for instance. They came from a very low work, what would I say, a very bad working class upbringing. But they came from a very bad poverty-stricken areas in London. And of course, you saw what the way they turned out, like, you know. But there is that element in working class areas, but it's not just working class areas, Niall, too. We need to highlight it in the well-to-do areas as well, because if you notice in places like, as you named it, there, posh places, there can be a lot of antisocial behaviour going on in them places too, regarding drugs and
I'm not suggesting that isn't happening, and it is. But you don't get the antisocial behaviour to the extent that you would get in a working class area, for example. You're not going to get the same antisocial behaviour in Killiney as you'd get in Finglas.
Oh, no. No, definitely not.
A lot of that's to do with the density of population too, mind you. But
But you see, over the last 40, 50 years, you see, and it's been highlighted in this country a lot. We've built a lot of places there. We've actually got rid of a lot of buildings, and we've put in a lot of slums into places. And where you have that kind of atmosphere, it's always
But here's the thing. I'm agreeing with everybody, so to speak, to some degree, including Alan and Eddie, in some of the points that they're making. But what I'm saying is, what's the answer? Because you're always going to have a percentage of the population who don't contribute, or a percentage of the population who do contribute and earn very little money, small amount of money, and couldn't afford to get onto the property ladder, and rely on the state to provide for them. So what's the solution? So where do they live if everybody's going to complain and say, well, you can't live here because I pay money for this house and you're not going to live near me? So where do they live? Do we just keep lumping them all together? Because if you keep doing that, you go back to the 1970s and 60s and 70s, ghettos.
And the problem then, of course, you have two at the moment, and this will be going on for quite a long time, is you have a situation where people are out on the streets homeless and everything like that, you know?
Yeah, by the way, I know Alan said it is primarily a Dublin problem, but it does happen all over the country. For example, in
Cork. You look at it here in Cork, it's rampant here.
Yeah, what's the name of the place Roy Keane is from?
Mayfield
is quite a lot of antisocial behaviour.
Mahon now would be a rough area, like, you know. Farrenree, Knocknaheeny, Churchfield, them kind of areas, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what have they all got in common?
Well, they have a lot of antisocial behaviour going on, and
all council areas.
But they're all council areas, is the point that Eddie's making.
They're council areas, yeah, exactly, you know. And if you remember, Niall, there back in the 70s and 80s, do you remember the joyride? Do you remember the fellas used to be going around
stealing
the cars and crashing the cars?
Yeah.
There is a kind of touch of that going on again, but not as bad as it was back then, because back then they were complete loops altogether. They were joyriding.
Oh, I know. It was the same in Talla. We used to talk about it on the radio. It was the same in Talla, yeah, the joyriding in Ballyfermot, and it became a big problem.
Yeah.
The reason that's not as big a problem anymore is because they've moved on to doing other things like selling drugs. But the reason it's not as big a problem is because it's harder to steal a car nowadays.
Yeah.
You know?
And sure, even the time, if you remember, Niall, do you remember the time they used to get chased by the Blue Buckles? Remember that was an old name for the Gardaí? Do you remember?
Yeah.
They'd be getting chased by the Blue Buckles. The Blue Buckles would be running down the street after them, trying to give them a good battering, like, you know. And as I say, Eddie, I do agree with what Eddie is saying there. You know, if you're working hard and paying your taxes and abiding by the law and doing what you have to do, you should be respected. You shouldn't have certain people coming into an area, blighting the area. You know, that's a major concern on anything. Like, and it does it does deprive the area and the valuation of the houses. Like,
okay, I'm hearing everybody kind of saying something similar, but Alan, let me just come back to you. So if everybody's saying something similar and we all are in pretty much agreement that there's a problem, what's the solution, Alan?
Well, I just think if there's areas, if you're buying a house for 400,000, the 10% rule should be a 10% area where the working class area is suitable to their environment. And so I know it's a ghettoisation, but it's the only thing that's going to offset people feeling that they're spending money and then it's been denied them that they can't live in a quiet, peaceful area where the working class people are unemployed class.
Well, they were kind of going backwards, aren't they?
As I said, Niall, no, the only
walkaround...
Go
ahead,
find a private housing estate that was built, that was 100% before this law change was brought in. And you know then.
I know you don't. No, you don't, because what's happening in a lot of those estates
is... Yeah, I know a few of the council buy a few of the houses, but the percentage is going to be a lot smaller than what
I know somebody who lives in I know somebody who lives in Clontarf in, you know, on a really expensive street, probably one of the most expensive streets in the city, by the way, in Clontarf. And the council have already bought a couple of houses there for between 800,000 and 900,000.
What I'm saying is you're always going to get a few, but the percentage is going to be less than a 10% integrated estate.
I mean, most people, I would imagine 95% of the population of this country couldn't afford a house in Clontarf. And yet we have people living in Clontarf who are on low income and don't earn any money.
Yeah.
On that note, I think that's unfair on people who live in Clontarf or who have spent a lot of money to buy a house in Clontarf. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Of course it is.
You know, I don't want to live in Clontarf. But I'm just saying, you know, I mean, it's a bit pretentious for me. I wouldn't be interested.
I mean, where's the incentive to do well in life? You get to live beside the seaside for free.
Yeah, I know. I've always said, by the way, I like living in cities, but I've changed my mind over the last few years. No, I don't like living in cities anymore. I'm not a city person anymore. I don't think I'd like to ever.
No, where do you live now?
But that's none of your business.
No, I don't mean it like that.
I'm more rural now. Yeah.
Yeah, rural area. Yeah. I live in Newbridge.
All right. Okay. Well, that's kind of reasonably rural too, isn't it?
Well, I live beside. I have the one thing I know about my area is 80% of the people in my block of apartments are all foreign. And I got on great with it. There's never been antisocial behaviour. Everyone just says hello, goodbye. There's no...
You know what I do miss? When I was young, I lived in Edenmore, right? Which is a council area, right? Now, mind you, everywhere was a council area when I was young. Because, of course, Sean Lamass, you know, was the first man to build council housing in this country in the 1960s. And in 1963, my mother and father bought a house in Edenmore. But here's the thing. The one thing I do miss about council areas and living in a council area was the sense of community. But I think that's gone for most council areas now. So that kind of sense of people people looking out for each other. Because you have to remember.
Looking out for,
time in council areas, everybody was poor. Just that I know, nobody was really wealthy, apart from people
like
Gaymore.
Do you know that saying, Niall, that they used to say years ago, Niall, oh, you could leave your door open.
Come on in, the door is always open. Isn't that what they used to say?
No, you could leave your door open and you'd know you're safe, your flat was safe. There was nothing in your house to rob.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying to you is, there were different times. Council housing at that time, or corporation housing as it was called at the time, was a different situation because everybody was pretty much in the same boat. You know, it was a young Ireland, it was a poorer Ireland. Most of us didn't have any money. Most of us couldn't afford a house in those days. You know, because I remember when we lived in Edenmore, Cameron Estate was around the corner. I don't know if people know the location of where I'm talking about. And we used to call Cameron Estate the purchased houses. Oh, they live in the purchased houses. And we were kind of looking at them. Oh, they're better than us. Like, they live in purchased houses. Look at their purchased houses. And they weren't that much different, by the way, can I just say. They just had nicer fronts on them. You know what I mean? But they were purchased.
That seems to be the story of the wealth in Ireland. Nicer front.
Yeah, absolutely. Eddie, when you were a kid, where did you live, Eddie?
Lived in Darndale, then Talla, and now Clondalkin.
Well, there you go. I mean, Eddie, then you're a bit of a hypocrite, really, aren't you?
Not at all.
Well, you lived in Darndale. You were glad of it then.
Yeah.
No, but I'm not a hypocrite because I still knew it was a shithole when I lived there.
Right. Okay.
You know what I mean? Not a hypocrite.
Alan, where did you live as a kid?
Sorry?
Yeah, where did you live as a child, Alan?
I lived in the worst areas of Dublin. Dolphins Barn when I was from 1 to 8. And then up in Michael's Estate in Inchicore.
Inchicore.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And Joe, where did you...
I loved the area, but it was plagued with crime.
Well, it does have its obviously the consequences, all right. Joe, where did you live in Cork when you were younger? Or is that, have you always lived where you live?
Oh, I'm in the same house since the day I was born, Niall, actually. Yeah, my parents' house.
Right, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's in
are you in a posh part of Cork? You don't have to tell me where you live, but you're in a posh part of Cork?
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's posh, it's all right, it's okay, you know, the neighbours are grand, you know, they're all good people, they look out for me and everything.
Is it a purchased house?
My father bought a house in the 90s.
Off the corporation?
For me, like, you know, yeah, they were doing that tenant purchase thing there, you know, they were trying to
sell them off,
at the time.
Yeah, I remember it well, yeah, I think everybody availed of that, including my own parents at the time. Listen, Eddie, Alan, Joe, thank you very much indeed. I'm sorry I'm running short of time. I do apologise. After the break, we'll be talking about Christmas. It is that time of the year. What date is it? I have to see. How much time have we left? How much time? It's the 9th. Jesus Christ. Ooh, that's not good, is it? It's the 9th. It's the 9th, Molly. Christmas is literally around the corner. It's less than 2.5 weeks away. Hope you've everything bought. Have you got everything bought? Has everybody got everything bought? I doubt it. Anyway, after the break, by the way, just for a bit of fun, Molly has one of her hampers to give away. It's a couple of CDs and what have you in a bag. She'll decide at the end of the show who she's giving it to, by the way. Well, the computer decides. We don't, actually, to be honest with you. Based on the WhatsApps. I want you to finish the sentence. The sentence is simply, you know it's Christmas in Ireland when. You know it's Christmas in Ireland when. Now, we did this the other night. It was good fun. People talked about the Coca-Cola advertisement. Holidays are coming. Holidays are coming. But things we do uniquely in Ireland, like your parents and your aunties and uncles getting pissed on Christmas Day. Things we do uniquely in Ireland that are very Irish. Here's another thing that I remember from Christmas. I always got a new pair of pyjamas at Christmas. So myself, my brother and my sister, my mother would buy us a new pair of pyjamas. That was probably the only time of the year we got a new pair of pyjamas. You'd sleep in them for the rest of the year to be smell off them. Anyway, so Christmas Eve, you were put in the bath, all three of us usually in the same bath to save water, washed, put into your new pyjamas. Christmas Eve, you're sitting there and you'd be waiting patiently for Santa Claus to come in your new pyjamas, sent off to bed. They always were paisley print pyjamas. So they were kind of things that were traditionally Irish, to get your new pyjamas at Christmas. I don't know whether leaving out the, you know, the food for the reindeer, is that kind of traditionally an Irish thing? I don't know. Christmas is different all over the world, by the way. Different countries have different traditions. Isn't it Poland, I think, where they have the Christmas dinner the day before Christmas, isn't it? Christmas Eve, isn't it? They have the Christmas dinner. So there's different celebrations and different traditions. But things that are traditionally Irish at Christmas, with the exception of getting hammered, because we all know that's very traditionally Irish. Things that are traditionally Irish. In other words, you know it's Christmas in Ireland when blank. Fill in the blank, send it to us now. We'll pick one random WhatsApp at the end of the show and Molly will give somebody a call back and we'll send you off a couple of CDs or whatever it is she has in her little bag. The number is 087-188-0000.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
McCarthy Insurance Group, serving the community for over 70 years. For home, farm, motor, life, health and business insurance, log on to mig.ie or free phone 1-800-50-1111. Probably your best call in 2024. Charles McCarthy Insurance is trading as McCarthy Insurance Group is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.